There's a number that every leader pays for, and almost none of them measures. It's the gap between the least a person can do without getting in trouble and the most that the person is actually capable of giving. The least is compliance. It's showing up, dotting the I's and crossing the T's of the job description, meeting the bar. You can demand that. You can write it into a contract, monitor it, enforce it. The most is another matter altogether. It's the extra hour nobody asked for. The creative solution someone suggests for a problem well outside his or her assigned duties. The phone call to a customer that goes beyond the customer service script because a worker actually cares. That extra, economists call it discretionary effort, is the difference between a workforce which merely functions and a workforce that consistently excels. But here's the leadership reality behind today's episode. You cannot command the most. You can only command the least. The gap between them, the discretionary effort, is given voluntarily or it is not given at all. Engagement is the art of gaining that voluntary effort that you are not allowed to demand. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Upsize Your Leadership, the podcast about enhancing your effectiveness wherever you lead, whatever your role. Thanks for joining our conversation today. My name is Dr. Mike Armour, President of Strategic Leadership Development International, which I founded in Dallas over 25 years ago. We are strategic architects for organizational and executive development. We offer a comprehensive array of leadership development services for organizations of any size, with a special focus on leadership challenges faced by C-suite executives. You can learn more about me and my firm at leaderperfect.com. This is episode 5 in a 6-part series on the 5 essentials of leadership. The series has been taking us up a conceptual ladder one rung at a time. We can call the ladder congruence. As we ascend the ladder, congruence within our organization increases. The guiding principle is that the level of congruence in an organization determines its ultimate ability to be agile, fast, and innovative. In episode 2, we began with the first rung, character, congruence within a leader. We looked at character as consistent alignment of values, words, and actions. In episode 3, we moved to trust, congruence between people, built and maintained through balanced reciprocal relationships. In episode 4, we stepped to the next rung, alignment, congruence among people, because they are all pulling in the same direction. These three essentials of leadership, character, trust, and alignment, along with two more that we are yet to take up, are the constituent components of the congruence accelerator. That's my name for the catalyst that releases an organization's full potential to master the demands of agility, speed, and innovation. What I refer to as the three kingmakers in today's hyper-competitive business world. High degrees of congruence allow the gears of an organization's engine to generate optimal output. Where congruence is low, some gears never engage at all. Our previous episode had us standing on the alignment rung of the congruence ladder. Toward the conclusion of that episode, I noted that alignment in and of itself does not assure that an organization performs to its potential. It's possible to build a perfectly aligned organization that is also a tired one. People know exactly where to go, they are pulling in the same direction, but their energy for the effort is sorely limited. Alignment channels energy directionally. It does not create energy. We find that energy on the next rung of the ladder, where the leadership essential is engaging people in ways that motivate and inspire them. That's our topic today. As we step on this rung, congruence remains our theme. We are, after all, climbing the congruence ladder. But today we are shifting our focus to a new domain of congruence, congruence between the individual and the enterprise. You've probably never examined motivation and engagement from the perspective that I'll offer in the next 20 minutes. So don't go away. I'll be back in just a moment.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
When an organization is fully aligned, everyone is facing the same direction, pursuing the same ultimate outcome. Yet people can all face in the proper direction, but not pour themselves into pursuing the ultimate outcome. You align directionally with your feet. Pouring yourself into the pursuit of that direction requires your heart. That's where engagement comes in. In previous episodes, as we've progressed up various rungs of the congruence ladder, we've seen congruence change how it manifests itself. We started at the level of personal character, which is congruence inside one person. On the next rung was trust. Congruence between two or more people. On the alignment rung, congruence extends to teams or entire organizations, leading them to a concerted effort to row in the same direction. As we move to the engagement rung, our focus returns to the individual. Engagement is congruence between a single human being and the work that he or she has been asked to do. Engagement always involves congruence between what a person values and what the organization is pursuing. As we shall see, leaders have a primary responsibility for fostering that congruence. The process by which leaders activate engagement becomes evident when we consider how we use words related to engagement in routine statements. We speak of a lock that is engaged, a couple who are engaged, an engaging conversation, an engaging idea. Now, let's survey these phrases and notice what stands out in them. The dominant characteristic of an engaged lock is that it is connected. With a couple who are engaged, the dominant characteristic is mutual commitment marked by genuine care for each other. The dominant quality of an engaging conversation is that the parties are in deep rapport, exchanging thoughts and stories in ways that deepen their relationship. And the dominant attribute of engaging ideas is that they open our minds to captivating possibilities. Drawing on these examples, we can then map the agenda for leaders who seek engagement from their people. Leaders must first connect with their people at a personal level. Second, they should use this connection to demonstrate caring commitment to their people. Third, as part of this demonstration, they should communicate with their people in a collaborative, collegial, respectful manner that draws leader and people closer together. And fourth, they should routinely convey their aspirations in ways that captivate everyone's imagination. In nurturing engagement, two realities are uppermost. First, example counts. We cannot expect more engagement from our workers than they see in us as their leaders. As in so many other aspects of leadership, the process of gaining engagement requires leaders to model the way. Second, in today's world, we should not expect worker engagement unless managers have shown genuine but non-intrusive personal interest in the life of the workers. Here, too, is a distinction between commitment and engagement. I've seen situations in which workers sensed that management had little interest in them as individuals, yet these workers were still committed to their work, often because they believed in the enterprise itself without regard to the level of commitment to their managers. But while workers or volunteers may remain committed when leadership seems distant or disinterested in them as a person, rarely will they become genuinely engaged in their work. However, leaders do not promote engagement merely for the sake of personal relationships. They seek engagement with workers in order to promote worker engagement with the overall enterprise. They measure worker engagement, or in the not-for-profit world, volunteer engagement, by the degree to which people are emotionally invested in what the leader seeks to accomplish. The key phrase in this metric is emotionally invested. To be compliant, workers need little or no emotional investment. They may not even need to be mentally engaged. They simply have to be adept at endlessly repeating familiar procedures. On the other hand, being fully engaged demands mental, psychological, and emotional investment. Compliance is possible without emotional investment. Genuine engagement never is. That's why the fourth rung on the ladder is to engage workers in ways that motivate and inspire them. Inspiration evokes emotion. When it comes to worker engagement, however, motivation precedes inspiration. Or to put it another way, no one can inspire us to do something that we are not first motivated to do. Leaders, therefore, need both a motivational strategy and an inspirational strategy. Thus, before we examine inspiration, let's first discuss motivation. The motivational role of leadership is to connect the vision of the leader to the values of the follower. Let me repeat that because it's a foundational concept. The motivational role of leadership is to connect the vision of the leader to the values of the follower. There are two key terms in this statement: vision and values. In the previous episode, I spoke at length about vision. In this case, think of vision as the destination that leadership wants people to envision and then pursue. And the values are personal values, what someone actually cares about. In alignment, leaders connect the values of the organization to its vision. In motivation, they link the values of the individual worker to that vision. Beyond that, leaders also link the values of the individual to what the leader envisions as the best means of achieving the organizational vision. Engagement is the act of joining vision and values. To the degree that people can see their own values living inside the leader's vision, the vision stops being the exclusive dream of someone else and becomes theirs in part. This sense of ownership is critical. People only pour themselves into what they consider their own. Contrast two situations. In the first, I'm asked to pursue something that does not line up with my values, but I will keep my heart for the weekend. By contrast, when vision and values are aligned, when my own values fit what I'm being asked to pursue, I don't have to be pushed. The work draws me. It pulls me. What I've been asked to do is the same. I'm the same person, but the results are radically different. The difference is congruence between vision and personal values. Since motivation is charged with linking these two, let's delve into that word for a moment. It derives from a Latin noun, motus, the root of a family of words that includes motive, motivation, emotion, and motion. My own definition of motivation draws on all four of them. I define motivation as the process of combining motive and emotion to create motion. Motive alone does not motivate. Any fan of murder mysteries knows that several people may have a motive for killing a victim, but most never act on their motive. For the act to be perpetrated, some emotion, jealousy, anger, resentment, fear, envy, greed, or what have you, must be coupled to the motive to trigger commission of the crime. As human beings, Our natural inclination is to resort to incentives to encourage desired behavior. We do it with young children. We do it when training pets. The governing principle is, do what I ask and you get a treat. Ignore what I ask and you get a punishment. That kind of conditioning works with small children because their moral compass is not yet fully developed. Their sense of right and wrong is still rudimentary. Their value system is not yet formed. We therefore cannot motivate them by appealing to their values. At this stage of development, their motives are not connected to values. Motives, to the degree that they exist at all, are tied to obtaining immediate physical reward or avoiding immediate physical punishment. We are therefore reduced to using near-term incentives to gain short-term changes in behavior. A common mistake is for managers and executives to rely on incentives to obtain long-term desired behavior. To the degree that they do so, leaders are treating workers like children, not adults. Adults do have a developed value system, and these values are the primary determinant of what they commit to and what they hold back from. Accordingly, adults have an extensive array of motives that are not found in children. As leaders and managers, we must motivate within the framework of a worker's values by activating motives associated with those values. This does not mean that incentives are irrelevant, but they play a different role and must be utilized in a different manner from the way that we use them in incentivizing children. To get a handle on that difference, we must first distinguish between motives and incentives. Although they are closely connected, incentives and motives are not the same thing. Mistaking one for the other is a principal reason that efforts at motivation fail. Incentives are external. They are something you offer or threaten a person with from the outside. A bonus, a raise, a deadline, a consequence, a penalty, or punishment. Motives are internal and are always attached to a value. If something holds no value for us, we have no motive to pursue it. Motive is the impetus that inclines us toward a course of action that holds out the promise of satisfying a value. Now, an incentive can awaken a motive, but only if the incentive happens to stroke a value that we already embrace. When incentives stroke real, existent values, one or more motives activate. The motives may be strong, moderate, weak, or even nominal. The strength of the motives depends on the intensity of our desire for their associated values. If this desire is intense enough, it supplies a sufficient emotion for our motives to generate motion. If an incentive fails to connect to one or more values, or if it connects to values for which we have only limited desire, the incentive is inert. Within itself, the incentive has no power to motivate because it does not activate a motive. As a result, no voluntary action, no motion ensues. That's the great limitation of incentives. They are external, but the motives behind motion are internal. Motives take shape, evolve, and reconfigure themselves over time as experiences multiply and maturity advances. What motivates us at one stage of life may have no motivational influence at all at another stage. An incentive is something that you control. You can give it or withhold it. It's yours to give. But you cannot give someone a motive. You have no control over another person's motives. A motive has to form within the individual around something that he or she values. So, motivation, properly understood, is fundamentally an internal process through which a motive is sufficiently energized by emotion to set in motion a course of action aimed at satisfying some value associated with that motive. Thus, as leaders, we need to target our motivational initiatives not at incentives outside of a person, but at values within the person, since motives cluster around values. There is a singular means by which leaders motivate. They connect where they are taking the organization to the personal values of those within the organization. If the connected value is one that a person holds dear, the connection generates a positive emotional spark. If the value is cherished enough, this emotional spark may be intense enough to trigger motivated motion. But the resulting motivation may not carry enough energy to sustain long-term, wholehearted commitment to the organization's vision and strategies. Adding that sustaining energy requires going beyond motivation to inspiration. Material or transactional incentives may be sufficient to motivate, but they have little power to inspire. That's why the fourth rung on the congruence ladder is engaging people in ways that motivate and inspire. Leaders must always be prepared to move beyond motivation to inspiration. Inspiration stokes the emotions aroused by an activated motive. That is, a motive that has been stimulated enough that motivation has set in, but with too little energy to sustain itself over time. Inspiration provides that energy. In fact, we can think of inspiration as the energizing force that makes motivation sustainable long-term. The tools for creating inspiration are diverse, all of them intended to arouse emotion. They include inspiring stories, engaging slogans, exposing people to heart-touching realities, painting an idyllic picture of what the future could hold, and testimonials from those who have experienced the leader's vision firsthand, just to name the more common ones. These techniques should be used repeatedly and regularly because emotion has a short half-life. The tools of inspiration keep this emotion highly charged. In sum, therefore, our primary aim in motivation is to engage motives. Our primary aim in inspiration is to engage emotions. Motive plus emotion leads to motion. Both motivation and inspiration may be stimulated by something external, but they arise internally inside the individual. Incentives, on the other hand, always reside outside. They are effective tools. Use them appropriately. Just don't mistake them for the engine that drives commitment or engagement. You now see why incentives have little leverage to engage workers who are disengaged. Yet offering additional incentives is almost a knee-jerk reaction from many leaders and managers when they try to increase engagement. Another propensity among leaders and managers is to reach superficial conclusions about why workers are disengaged. They attribute disengagement to an employee's having run out of energy or being lazy or just altogether checked out. That's almost never the proper diagnosis. Disengaged workers usually have plenty of energy. They're simply spending it somewhere else. Often their disengagement at work is due to the culture at work. If the culture does not make them feel safe being their natural self, or expressing their deepest convictions or offering their honest opinions, they adopt a persona for the workplace. It's not their genuine person. This persona must watch every word, hide what it really thinks, suppress its actual strengths. Such effort does not come free. Every ounce of energy spent on self-protection is an ounce not spent on their work. They are paying a self-protection tax, the engagement cousin of the verification tax that we saw in Episode 3 when we analyzed distrust. In low engagement organizations, people spend the day paying a self-protection tax, managing how they are perceived, guarding against blame, acting out a version of themselves that the culture will accept. They go home exhausted, having produced very little, and they can't understand why. It was not the work that drained them. The masking did. When people can be genuine, when they feel seen, when their work connects to something that they care about, the energy that was going into self-protection floods back into the work itself. That's not some soft idea. It represents an enormous transfer of energy. Within low-engagement organizations, engagement breaks down as a result of two gaps. You will recall that with each leadership essential in this series, we've named two gaps that must be avoided: insincerity and inconsistency in character, imbalance and unpredictability in trust, divergence and ambiguity in alignment. Engagement follows a similar pattern. In engagement, the first gap is meaninglessness, the failure to motivate and inspire. Leadership never connected the vision to anything that the person values. As a result, no internal motive ever formed, and with no motive, there is nothing for emotion to energize. Incentives may well be present, a paycheck, a deadline, a bonus, but those are external. They knock on the door without being answered because nothing inside the person has been engaged. No motive, no emotion, no motion. People in this gap aren't lazy. Their inner life is unreached. They can tell you what they have been tasked to do, but they have no emotional skin in the game. The second gap is suppression, the failure to let people be themselves. Here, leaders have awakened a motive inside of them. These people do care about the vision, but the culture won't let them bring their real self, their real voice, or their real strength to bear. They have learned that candor is risky, that initiative is dangerous, that the safe move is to lay low and play small. Consequently, the motion that the motive and emotion would have produced gets diverted into paying the self-protection tax instead. This gap quietly burns out your most talented people first because they are the ones with the most genuine self to express. Now, notice that the two failures, the two gaps, are different in kind. The first one means that the internal engine to build motion was never built. The second means that the engine is running, but motion is blocked. And here's the leadership lesson from both. They are yours to fix as the leader. Neither of these failures is a character flaw in the employee. The design flaws are in the environment. When leaders engage their people in ways that motivate and inspire, workers reciprocate by becoming more engaged in the organization. Properly performed, motivation and inspiration lead to congruence between individual workers and the overall organization. In this setting, the congruence accelerator can have its greatest multiplier effect on agility, speed, and innovation. In closing, look at the chain we've now built through this entire series. Character makes you predictable. Predictability undergirds trust. Trust gives you the influence to align the organization. Alignment points everyone's energy in one direction, and engagement fills that direction with energy, with people who don't just know where to go, but want to get there with everything that they have. But here's the final piece, and the one that completes the series. Engaged energy by itself is not the same as excellence. You can have an organization that is inspired, aligned, full of effort, and still settles for mediocrity, still tolerates good enough. Enthusiasm is not the same as achievement. Our last leadership essential takes all of this energy and gives it a standard. The fifth essential is to create a results-oriented culture that demands excellence of itself. Not a leader who demands excellence, a culture that demands it from itself without being told. That's where all five essentials finally come together, and that's where we'll end the series next time. Thanks again for joining me today. A PDF copy of this program is available for download at upsizeyourleadership.com/episodes. Find this episode in the Date Oriented Index and click on the link to download the script. If you've not heard the earlier programs in this series, download them from the same page. The series episodes are carefully woven together around the theme of five leadership essentials. And share this episode with friends or recommend the series to them. The series has offered a unique view of the most critical roles that leaders must fulfill. If you are not a subscriber to my podcast, take a moment to click on the subscribe button on the media player. I will be bringing you quite a number of insightful programs in the weeks ahead. I look forward to rejoining a conversation with you next week. Until then, find some way every day to upsize your leadership.